Have you ever looked in the mirror and thought, how the hell did I get here? We're successful on paper, we're leading teams, we're checking the boxes, we're doing absolutely everything we're supposed to do. But secretly, you're exhausted. You're performing instead of leading, and you don't know who you are without the pressure. If that hit, this episode is for you. Because today I'm sitting down with Brian Bogert, who's a speaker, coach, and one of the boldest voices in identity-driven leadership to talk about how we burn out, not because we're weak, but because we've been taught to abandon ourselves in the name of success. We're naming the real cost of overachievement, the truth about boundaries, and how to lead with your nervous system, not just your resume. Buckle up, because we're not doing fluff today. We're doing truth. We're doing truth, tension, and the tools that bring you back home. And still scale as a badass leader. Let's go. Welcome to today's Balanced Leader, where we don't do fluff. And if you've been chasing results, but haven't stopped to ask who you've had to become or who you've disconnected from to get there, this conversation with Brian Bogert is for you. Brian, you're known for flipping the lid on leadership myths, not by giving people more to do, but by guiding them back to what most leaders have forgotten, what I call the inner resources, and that internal clarity, alignment, and truth that gets buried under pressure, performance, and the pursuit of more. So not the polished version, the real one, because if the results aren't rooted in who you are, they're not going to last. So welcome to the show, Brian, and let's get started there. I'd love to hear, why do you think so many leaders chase that next achievement, but resist becoming the version of themselves who can actually hold it and achieve it?
I think that it's a lot of the common patterns that shape who we are in this world. You know, I'll start with just the most basic, because I do believe that we're all born as our most authentic, brightest, burning light that we'll ever be. Anybody who's ever had kids knows that. I mean, both my kids came out raw, like wanting to take over the world and just all this energy. And yet then what happens? Parents, teachers, coaches, and employers start telling people, you should do this, you shouldn't do this, you should be this, you shouldn't be that, you should want this, you shouldn't want that. Well, should in and of itself is a shame-based word that implies whoever you are, whatever you want, it's not good enough. And so what happens is we start living our lives, funneling ourselves down into this box based on who the world has told us to be versus who we actually are. And there's a whole lot that goes into this, but many high performers, right, in some form or fashion have learned, right, consciously or not, to receive love, validation, and connection through performance, which means that their value, their worth, their accolades, their love, their connection, their everything is dependent upon what they do versus who they are. And so when that's the dynamic, then it is always contingent upon the next outcome, right? And it's very much like in any performance-based world, if you're in sales, a high performer, athletics, politics, we have a very short memory as well. And so how do we operate as a world? What have you done for me lately? Right? So it doesn't even matter whatever accolades or accomplishments people have racked up. In fact, they could be mountains high, but it's very much, what have you done for me today? And so most people, I don't believe, are conscious to the fact that this is even a dynamic in a game that they play. They just focus on the next thing because that's also what the world tells us to do. Show up, put a smile on, push through, perform high, right? Like, let's show the highlight reels. And then now we live in a world where, like, the new rich or wealthy is to become a billionaire. Like, that's the amount of money that anybody actually needs, which, by the way, I don't want to bash any billionaires or anybody making any amount of money. I want everyone to make as much as they can and they want to and are capable of. However, right, like, we really need to start to ground ourselves in needs versus wants and getting really clear in who we are. And I have a personal story. We won't go deep on it, but here's the reality. I almost lost everything and everyone in my life as a result of me. My bank account was full. I found myself empty. I had all the external what's I was ever told I should want. House, car, money, beautiful wife, beautiful kids, everything. Yet I was completely empty inside. That's not a way to live, right? And I could have kept chasing those performance-based outcomes, but here's the reality. They weren't even feeding me, because when I would happen, I couldn't even celebrate them. I couldn't even acknowledge how amazing it was, because immediately I was on to the next thing instead of being grateful and grounded right now for who I am, what I have, and what I'm capable of. So that's a really simplified version, but I know we'll unpack it more as we go through the conversation.
Yeah, that's a boatload to begin with. And I love that, because as you were talking about it, even my mind was going, oh yeah, no, I feel successful when, right? And we always do that. I'll celebrate when, or I will know I'm successful when, I know I'll have love when. And to your point, we're taught of what that looks like at a very early age. But I love that you mentioned we don't come into the world with that. So love that. Yeah. So let me ask you, what's something that for you made you successful that you had to let go of, or you had to remove from your belief in order for you to achieve what you want? Because I'd love to give my listeners like real life examples. Let's talk a little bit about what's one shift that you had to make.
Well, I will own right out of the gate, there have been many, 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 many. But I'll focus here on one or two that I think really will probably land the hardest. I also want to start by defining success a little bit, because that part has significantly shifted for me. And so I think the reason I would give two answers is there's a two-part question, right? It my old definition of success was genuinely like growth. And it was always about growth, which meant I was stacking everything to my plate. And it was a financial metric. It was about external components. And so success was fleeting. It was always out there. And something that I really needed to like ground myself in to be able to be okay doing that is there's sacrifice that comes when you are in a grind mode that you may or may not even realize is taking place. And so I was able to sacrifice certain relationships, some of the ones that were most meaningful for me, because my head was down and I was focused on that external result and I was able to get laser focused. Now, this isn't a glorified, like this is a good positive thing. I'm highlighting this because it was a choice that allowed me to accomplish the level of success that I thought I wanted, which was external, right? And so over the course of 10 years, my partners and I built a $15 to $16 million practice. But by the time I was 27, it was $10 million and I was printing money and I believed that I had everything I ever wanted. Now, I did sacrifice a lot. Now, I also didn't do it unethically and I didn't ever stab anybody in the back, but it also perpetuated my shame, okay? The reason I slow down to answer this in two parts is because my new definition of success is joy, freedom, and fulfillment. And it's really about getting as much time back as I possibly can, right? Now, I can take that same work ethic, that same level of focus, that same grind mentality, the ability to compress time, put out crazy volume, make a million calls, get to the right people. But yet I didn't leave that business to replicate the same results. I left that business to get more grounded, centered, and clear in my life because I'm in the season of dad. I have a 10 and 11 year old. 5 years ago when I left full time, they were little. And I know that I will not get that time back. And so for me, the biggest singular shift in this process was getting clear enough in myself so that I could actually effectively negotiate my value and set boundaries proactively up front, and then have the ability to recognize and maintain accountability for myself and for others in what those boundaries need to look like. Why is this so important? Because when I launched my business, I did almost lose everything and everyone because I did start on the same traditional path, despite the fact that that was not my intent. I went and I replicated those same processes, but what did that lead to? Financial and emotional extortion and three business partners that were not set up in a way that actually allowed for scale and growth. In fact, they completely drained me, my time, my energy, my resources, and they took me out of alignment from who I was and the impact I wanted. I had to do a complete level set with the confidence and clarity in who I believed myself to be, as much as I believed what my wife was reflecting back to me and who she believed me to be that I wasn't capable of seeing. But it's really about understanding, again, my value in a way that I can actually set effective boundaries and not allow that level of extortion. That is the area that I got bit the most, even in my prior life of success. The level of financial and emotional extortion that I allowed, despite all the positives that I told you, with a bank account full and yet I was completely empty. I just outworked all the extortion, and yet it all sat right in here. I still was getting completely messed up and completely screwed in certain things because I could not stand on my own two feet with clarity, boundaries, and accountability. And that is the biggest shift that has allowed the full level of how I define success to come into fruition. Why? Because today I get to live exactly based on who I am. I know my value. I can articulate my value. Others don't even hesitate to what that value is. And when we communicate early and often and consistently, we actually protect ourselves in a way that we don't need to live in a protected state. Therefore, we actually get all of the positive things that we want. And one of the lessons I teach, just to land this, and we won't go deep on it, is that the second we protect ourselves, we guarantee we disconnect ourselves. My prior definition of success was to prove to others, based on the first question you asked, because I learned to receive love, validation, and connection through performance. It was a protective energy that disconnected me from myself and those I cared most about. This layer, I'm deeply connected. I'm not protected, though I can protect if I need to. But that also means everything that I've ever wanted is flowing with seemingly little to no effort.
I love that, because I'm in the midst of learning more about parts work. I'm not sure how familiar you are with parts work, but, you know, definitely the protector comes up a lot. And you can give the protector a name, you can call it the ego, you can call it whatever you want. But I always say, you know what, it's like prehistoric man protecting himself from the saber-toothed tiger, 100%. Right? When we talk about fight, flight, freeze, fawn. And I said, now there's no saber-toothed tiger necessarily there, but there's potentially other things that take its place, whether that's financial, because you've got a mortgage, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And I love how you call out that, you know, and that was kind of, I like to call it the ego. Sometimes we'll call it the protector, but sometimes it's gripped. Yeah, it's gripping so tight and it's in the driver's seat. We don't want it in the driver's seat. And I've been working through, so how do I have that conversation with it to hear what it's saying, but not to let it guide me the way I don't want to go? What's, Brian, what's one practical step you can take that you feel can soften that hold that it has and move forward while remaining in that integrity that you speak about?
I think the first and the foremost is, I think we need to understand this concept and how it plays out. And then there's some awareness components that become the most important to be able to start to unwind those patterns, right? What ego is the same thing, right? It's a protective low frequency energy. It's operating from shame. It's operating from a need to justify, protect, or defend, right? And most of these things, by the way, are cellular memory that are being activated in moments that have nothing to do with what's right in front of us. Right? Even in your current state, like the conditioning of being a 30-year in-house HR person, there are associations to the roles that you've played and what that translates to in your identity that directly connect to moments that even in your own business today, you will still find yourself protecting in a way that's unconscious. Or even if you're aware of it, it's like, wait, why am I doing this? This doesn't make sense, or it's not congruent for today. And so if we understand the concept, I think we all seek and desire four things, right? To your point, it's heart, it's nervous system hardwired. Why? Because the nervous system is there to anticipate risk, threat, or harm to life, right? So anything that our nervous systems react to, in theory, are there to design to protect us. But like you said, the saber-toothed tiger, or you cut your leg 100 years ago, you could die. But that's not the current reality for most of us, especially in first world countries anymore. And so it's the non-real life-threatening components, most of the time emotional, that actually cause our nervous systems to go into full halt. So if we all want these things, we all want to feel safe, we all want to feel protected, we all want to feel seen and understood, and we all want to feel connected. These last two are the two that we want the most, but they do not happen unless the first two do. So the second you walk into an environment and you don't feel connected, seen and understood, certainly safe or protected, it could be a networking event where everybody's handing out business cards and everybody wants something from you instead of for you. It could be walking back in for a consulting job for you, and you're sitting down with a C-suite in a boardroom, and there's a resonant memory around a CEO or a leader that made you feel unappreciated, and therefore you just start shrinking down, even though you have no reason to, right? It could be knowing that you're going to go back to your family's house for the holidays, and you know your dad, your aunt, your grandma are going to look at you a certain way, and weeks out, you start anticipating it. Everybody, when they think about like that armor, that need to protect, they understand this, but to make it tangible, think of that 35-gallon black trash bag. Unfold it flat, right? Like an outdoor bin, but make it flat. Don't put the air into it. And now hold that up right in front of you. This is your armor. So the question then becomes, how could you properly expect anyone, your intimate partners, your kids, your lovers, your friends, your parents, your clients, your prospective clients, your community members, to see who you are, what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do, your heart, your intent, your soul, your desires, your boundaries, your value, your worth, delivered through this opaque force field? And that's assuming that they're not carrying their own, that's going to further dilute the message. And so the very first step is we teach this idea of what's called a protector and connector. It's this idea that if I can walk into any room and realize that I'm the thermostat, not the thermometer, then I have the chance to completely change the dynamic, which means if I am in a protective state, it's about learning as a leader to recognize when I'm in a protective state so I can intentionally lower that armor and protection and wrap that layer of protection around the environment I'm in, to ensure that everybody gets everything they want. Now, what does this look like? It's done two ways, right? One, you can fabricate convincing yourself that you're safe in a moment to lower your armor short term, which can be done, but it will take more effort over time to do that if that's the only approach you take. The second is to actually do the work to unpack the patterns of your past that cause those cells to react and those beliefs to activate in moments when they're not even real. Right? To get to the source or sources of where those belief systems even were created and to start to do the work to unwind them. Because when you do that, then you can get to what I call a strong spine and a soft front. A strong spine is, I've done the work, just like I suggested in the prior answer, to know who I am, my value, my worth, my desires, my goals, all of it, which means that I can be unwavering in any environment. Have you seen the movie 8 Mile, Caroline?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Yeah,
you know that really last rap battle with Eminem, and he just like goes off and he's like, I did grow up from across the tracks. My buddy did shoot himself, and he goes off. And then what happens? He drops the mic and his competition had nothing. Strong spine is the ability to get yourself to a place where you realize you have nothing that you need to justify, protect, or defend. When you do that, you're free, because then you can do what I call soft front. It's lowering the armor. I think of my wife and my kids in this. If they want to come to me for love, laughter, light, leadership, do they want to lay their head down on a metal chest piece of armor? No, they want me. And so here's the truth, okay? There's a couple of simple questions that everyone can ask, because this is the direct answer to the question you asked me. What is one tangible thing that I can do, or anybody listening can do, to break this pattern and start to bring awareness to this? The first is, you have to bring awareness and understanding to the fact that you're even in a protective state at all. So if you walk into a networking event and you start noticing yourself retreating, making yourself small, getting uncomfortable, someone makes a comment to you and you feel that protection or that defense or that need to justify go up, everybody knows what this feels like, whether they want to admit it or not. When they actually slow down, everybody knows what this feels like. So I'm just asking you all, because nobody's going to be with me for this to be witnessed, trust yourself. And the second you know that you're in a protective state, I don't care what the variables are, I want you to pause and ask yourself three questions. The first is what I'm reacting to right now due to what's right in front of me or the trash from my past? Here's a little trick. 99% of the time, it's the second. The second question, and I'll explain trash from my past in just a second. The second question, if you've not been able to separate realizing that what you're reacting to isn't due to what's in front of you, but historical memories, cellular memories, and conditioning that's causing you to show up in this moment, it's what am I protecting right now? Because if you can identify what it is that you're protecting, you can break free. My wife used to say something like this to me. Hey, honey, what do you want to do with the kids this weekend? But my shame and my anger filter would cause me to hear this. Hey, honey, you've not done enough to be a good husband and father here recently, so what are you going to do to make up for it this weekend? Of course I'm defending that. I elevate and I rattle off the 10 things I've done in the last few days to show her I'm a good husband and father. Not even what she asked. What was I protecting in that moment, though? I was protecting that being a father and a husband and a good one is something I care deeply about. And I felt, whether she said this or not, what I heard was she was challenging that. But for me to be able to break down, I don't need to protect that. I don't need to prove that. I don't need to justify that. It allows me to separate in the moment. The third question, if you've still not been able to release the armor yet, is, am I safe? Am I safe physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally? And if you can look down, look and see where your feet are, and you can be here in this moment, most of the time, most of us are safe if we actually admit it. And if you can answer the question that I'm safe, then whether you've done the source work or not, it's a choice to decide to open yourself. And no different than what I suggested earlier, it's what allows, but that's then what allows you to connect with yourself and with others in the room and to actually start to overcome those moments. We do a much more comprehensive process of this that we call trigger mapping, where people actually can start to deconstruct the patterns, align them with the physiological patterns in their body, the associated emotions, the external stimulus, so that they are very empowered to actually get ahead of it and reprogram. Because that's what we're doing. We're reprogramming. We're shedding layers and we're reprogramming and getting closer and closer to who we are. And so I said I'd mention this, so I'll wrap it quickly, but all of our concepts are this idea of taking out the trash from your past or transferring your waste into wealth. What is the trash from your past? It's the emotional triggers, behavioral patterns, and environmental conditions that have created a set of beliefs that your life has only further validated. Yet they continue to keep you stuck. They continue to be those dreadful repeating patterns in your lives. And the biggest thing that I want each and every one of you to know is the trash from your past is not your fault. But it does become your responsibility the second you become aware of it, or you start realizing that you're burying others in yours. But the fastest path is awareness and questions to break the pattern in a moment.
I love that. I love it. And we call, in my world, when I work with my coach, we call having the conversations with it, but like, you have to parent it, right? Because you didn't receive necessarily the parenting that you needed at that time. And so now you need to be the adult, you need to be the parent, and you need to be able to have the conversation with it and give it the love, the support, the accolades, whatever it needs. But I love that, because I think the other piece is we as human beings have a tendency to do the what if negative as opposed to the what if positive. And I've often worked with individuals around, well, what if I lose my job? What if I lose my house as a result? What if I, and I'm like, but what if it ends up being the job of your dreams? What if you make so much money because you are so happy, you have abundance in your life, it gives you the freedom to live your life? What if the possibilities are great? And let's look at worst case scenario. What if all of a sudden it's not what you want? Does that mean your world ends? You always have choice in your life. And so it's so important to stop being stuck, because I think that's part of it, right? We're stuck for so long before you know it. We're in our 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever it is, and go, that's not the life that I wanted to live. And taking that courageous step. Here's the thing,
though. We only exist in waste, and we only get stuck when we stop asking questions. I've said for a long time that I'm only as good as my questions, and I consistently am investing not only in asking better questions of myself, but of other people. But why? Because questions create options and opportunities. Yeah. With options and opportunities, we can make choices. With choices, we can then take actions, and then what happens? Clarity only comes on the other side of action. Most people think clarity comes because you sit and you get clear. No, you get somewhat clear, and then you put it into the world, and you determine. And I always teach, and I say this, clarity comes in two ways, either challenge or confirmation. But you only get that feedback after the action. But then it's a repeating cycle, right? So the only time we get stuck is when we stop asking questions of ourselves and of other people, and that's when we exist in waste. Right? So many people, because of my story, are like, oh man, how did you overcome everything with your arm and with all the challenges and all the everything? And it's like, but to your point, they were like, well, what if you just not been able to do anything? And I was like, yeah, but what if I could? Just to your point exactly, it's like, no, I've lived my life to try to shatter the expectations, show people what can be possible, show myself what's possible. That only happens through questions. I only learned to tie my shoes with one hand by asking questions, trying different things, figuring out the technique to do it. I only learned how to re-ride a bike after having no lat, no tricep, having lost all my balance by asking those questions. Well, what if I could? I only learned how to get out of the water and water skiing, getting up with one arm, because I was like, well, could I have enough strength in one side to pull myself out lopsided to get, yes. Yes, the answer is always yes. And the question is, though, are you asking yourself the questions that are keeping you stuck and looking retrospectively, or leaning into possibility and opening up what could be?
Oh my gosh, love that. So let's relate it back to, because we've got leaders, high-performing leaders. And they're often praised for their drive, for their decisiveness, for their results. But sometimes in the rush to perform, what causes them to disconnect from a vital inner resource? What happens there, Brian? What causes that disconnection to their inner resource? What have you seen this play out as? Like, what does it cost them when they don't do that?
I know it might sound cliche, but I think it costs them everything that actually matters, right? And I'll answer that in a little bit different way. I hate to give like a singular what causes it because I think there's a lot of
Sure.
variables that cause it. However, what I will say is I think that there really is a focus, particularly when we get into a rhythm and high leaders, we're so outcomes focused, we're so results focused, we're so growth oriented and focused. That things can truly be focused and distilled down to numbers, KPIs, performance, and how are we measuring all of these pieces versus all of the intangible components of what leadership really is, right? Leadership isn't a title, it's a responsibility. Leadership isn't just given to you. Leadership in genuine approach is earned, right? To lead with someone, it means you are leader enough to listen, leader enough to follow, leader enough to ask those questions, and leader enough to be the example and have the vulnerability in order to do so. Where I find most, I'm going to say high-performing leaders get stuck is particularly when they're in a culture that doesn't prioritize and focus on the vulnerable components of the people that run the business. And I don't mean the leaders that run the business. I mean the people that literally drive everything, regardless of whether it's a tech firm and their back-end software, whether their product or they're in a customer-facing oriented retail position. It doesn't matter. There are people in every single business. And so often, in the effort to grow, to move fast, to systematize, people are taken, their autonomy is taken away, their authority is taken away, their decision-making power is taken away, and their ability to actually be humans through the process gets taken away because though I talked about boundaries and accountability before, that's all done through the nature of we are also people, so how do we meet them where they are? When we get into a performance-based culture, I lived in one for a long time in one of my old firms, and frankly, it's one of the reasons I left is there was a lot of shame in it because it was very much a what have you done for me lately culture. And it was very much about performance results. And therefore, there was not a lot of latitude to really be able to understand like what were the things that were bubbling up that were causing issues in culture? Where was the mistrust coming from within the teams? Where was the lack of clarity coming from in the leaders that would say, my team never listens to me or they never seem to get it right? Where was the gaslighting coming from the sales team that was talking on the other side to the service team who was supposedly failing, but it was because of lack of clarity and direction, right? It's people get into this mode where they don't slow down long enough, again, to ask questions and to communicate early, often, and with clarity. And when we do that, we disconnect ourselves from each other and from the results that we actually want. And so that's where I see these organizations dying a slow death, because if there isn't a real heartbeat, if there's not a cultural leader or someone that gives people that hope, that perspective, and it's all about driving towards results, then you miss as a leader and you miss actually leading and elevating your teams to the potential that they have within them. Because we're not focused on the people, we're focused on the performance. And that, I think, is probably the singular biggest pattern that ties into the shame concept that we discussed, is when organizations lose perspective of why business even exists. Business, by definition, is to create and provide solutions to problems that exist in the marketplace through a transaction or an exchange of value. We forget that the reason we're even in business is to solve problems, to help people, to fix things, whether that's through a product or a service. And so if we don't even have that perspective, how can we grow and be a holistic leader if we're leading only numbers and not people?
Yeah, and I like that because you talked about true clarity, and I call it where you're just in that justified coping mechanism, right? You're just doing because you don't know what else to do. And so when we think about people first, because obviously you and I, people first, we know that when people first leadership is powerful, it isn't soft, it's scalable. But I think sometimes there's a belief out there, especially in the executive circles, that empathy means giving up control or looking weak or slowing things down. How do you help leaders shift that belief and show that that empathy can actually fuel performance and not hinder it, particularly in today's climates when leaders are being pushed to protect that margin and performance that you talk about? How do you help them hold on to that empathy without feeling like they're losing control?
So the big piece that I want to highlight is that control in and of itself is a protective state. It's typically driven by shame, and control is often there to create safety for people or perceived safety for people. Right. And so I highlight that because one of the big things that I really want to shift in the paradigm is this idea of control. I don't think that leaders actually do have control. I think they have influence. It's when they attempt to maintain control that they disconnect and it becomes a bigger problem. But to the broader question of what you asked, how do we show them that empathy is actually a superpower that can propel them forward versus be viewed as weakness or disconnection? Sometimes it is through working with that individual to just simply shift a perspective. Other times they need to be able to see it in action and see a different result to actually start to believe and lean in. And so one of the things I do with organizations is I often will come in and I'm what's gets referred to as a communication architect in inflection points for organizations. Okay. And so what does that mean? It means there may be a new leadership direction. There may be a new sales initiative or a whole new cultural branding that's taking place. It could be private equity money that's coming in and a whole new leadership team after a 40-year founder is leaving, right? And all of these are critical, but it's important to understand. But I just did this with an organization not long ago. It was a $250 million senior living organization. The entire C-suite was being replaced after two 40-year founders exited the business. It wasn't a traditional five-year exit. It was actually a two-year process of exiting where they sold off portions of the real estate in their senior living business 2 years ago, but they did not hand over the operations and the management until the most recent acquisition. Point in telling you all of this is all of the prior leadership team and the private equity are all more data-driven. They're more numbers-driven in terms of like how they've measured, and that's also where they've gotten a lot of the results. But almost all of them have heart. They have intent and good intent. However, they don't know how to communicate the need for the shift in some of the KPIs and the redirected focus with an average tenure of that organization that was 25 to 30 years who had all worked with under the same leadership. There's fear breeding like all over the place. There's a lack of trust. There's all these components. With them, it had to happen through incremental coaching and conversations with each of the senior leaders over the 2 month window. And then it all happened and came together in a singular event. Now, this isn't the answer for everybody else. I'm trying to help string the story together so you can see where I'm going with this. The truth of the matter is that it happened in little moments of breeding and gaining trust with vulnerability with these new senior leaders and the existing leaders within the organization. Not the whole organization, but the senior leaders that could give them feedback. I challenged them in a few different areas. We leaned in, we asked questions that set that vulnerability and the empathy started to flow. There was a major disconnecting point though. Because senior living, almost everyone in that business got in there to care for people. Almost everybody. They get in there to care for people, to put new programs in place, to help with senior living, to help with assisted living, the medical sides, the extended living, the vitality, all these pieces. They want to care for people and allow aging to be viewed as graceful versus just disconnected. The biggest problem, though, is that the singular variable that would allow them to deliver more care and have more impact actually was a KPI. It's a KPI that was so important for driving the dollars and the cents within each business, and it's occupancy rates. That's how it works in this business. The reason I highlight this and tell this story is occupancy rates in every conversation that they had in the 20 years prior would cause resistance to the senior leadership team because they felt like they were being viewed for performance. Well, if my occupancy rates aren't at the target, then I'm failing, I'm not good enough, or it feels as if it's just sales for sales' sake to fill the buildings. When in reality, it is the singular marker that drives revenue and a consistent amount of revenue that we can then derive margin to reinvest in the business. The leaders did not know how to connect those dots. And so we went in and we started asking lots and lots and lots of questions. Each of the senior leaders, the new C-suite, wanted to deliver those dots, but they couldn't. I asked them all to trust me going into this session, and each one of them, I helped structure their talk, the way that they could show up, and it wasn't fabricated. It was intentional with the words they wanted to choose. they were so vulnerable and so open in front of a room of 100 leaders across their company that had never met them, that in less than 24 hours, they literally breeded trust. They got everybody on the same page. And then we wrapped the whole piece around a message that allowed them all to rally around the impact and the singular KPI that gives them all the freedom they want. Sometimes it's just as simple as trying to figure out how to bring the leadership language into the frontline language and blending them in a way that we can all be working towards the same thing. At the end of the day, how does empathy work for us? It's realizing that it's not us versus them, it's we. It's allowing ourselves to realize that we have to walk shoulder to shoulder, guide and direct and set the example, but we also have to show the vulnerabilities where we don't have the answers figured out. Why? Because then they want to help us figure out those answers. They want to work on the same solutions to create more impact. So leaders, it's not a hierarchy. In fact, empathy is what puts you beside your team to get them to run through walls for you because they trust you and they see you as human. But when you're a disconnected leader that sits on a pedestal, you're going to only ever be that, and you're not going to get the intangibles out of your people without empathy and vulnerability. I always say that true strength actually hides behind vulnerability. And so sometimes it's a concept that we can teach, and other times we have to be able to show them through results, because when empathy exists, I've never seen a room of people not respond, ever. I've never seen a room of leaders or team leaders not trust that leader who demonstrated empathy even more, not care for them more, not want to help them more. Not if it's fabricated, though, only if it's real. If it's real, then we're good. But here's what I'm going to tell every leader about this. Empathy and vulnerability does not mean that you need to tell everything to everybody. It means being real in the moments that it matters. It means owning up to the fact that you are going through a challenging period of life. You don't have to tell everybody what's happening behind the scenes. But hey, if I seem a little disconnected, I've got a lot going on in my personal life right now. And therefore, these next couple of weeks, if I either seem on edge or I seem a little distant, all I'm wanting you to do is feel empowered to ask me if everything's okay, if there's anything you can do to help, and to realize it's not about you. It's leading with transparency, leading with clarity, so that people don't have to guess. Why? Because what I always used to say is, I know I have a big energy, right? But big energy delivered through armor is confusing as fuck for people. Leadership delivered through armor is confusing as fuck for people. If you want the best out of your people, be a human. Don't be a machine that's just driving performance.
Bravo. I'm doing a mic drop because I go back and I think about all the times that I was involved with building culture or adjusting culture or building trust again. And, you know, I think the other piece is the owners, the leaders, the execs, whoever they are, they really have to be open to it, because if you say you're open to it and you're not, they'll call you out on your BS real quick, because the people will know it. They'll feel it. And I think it's, you know, making that change. Communication, I think, is one of the lost arts, if you will, where we don't take the time to listen to our people, hear, and I'm going to emphasize here, what they're saying, so that we can answer the questions that they're asking. To your point, I don't have to share everything, but I have to help you, to bring you along. It's just like development. If you want to develop your people, how are you developing them? Yep. You have to bring them along. You can't just throw stuff at them and expect, say, well, that's their development. I gave them stretch assignments. Well, right. How is that development? Have you been there to help bring them along, to share, to have those open conversations, to be vulnerable and say, you know what? I remember when I did that, this is the roadblock I came across. So I want you to learn from that. I mean, that's what development is.
100%. You know, I mean, and you've seen me speak on stage, and I've thrown some things into this, but it's like, I don't hide behind anything. I talk about the financial failures that I've had. I talk about how I almost lost my marriage because of my anger and the way that I was reacting. Like, and here's the reality. There's so many layers of detail behind each one of those two statements that I'm not saying. But the reality of it is, I'm saying enough that it also is relatable to other people, because I've yet to meet anybody who's ever been in any relationship of any type of significance who hasn't had a similar situation, like when my wife asked me what I want to do with the kids this weekend. Right. And so the concept here is not that, again, we have to share every single thing and we've got to be completely open and exposed, though there may be a place and a time for that also. But what does that actually breed? It breeds trust. And here's the other side of it. I was just talking with somebody in a DM just a couple of weeks ago. And they admitted that they were having financial constraints and cash flow problems. I voice noted back to them and I said, I understand. I've been there. And believe it or not, the last time I was there was only 3 years ago. But it was moments that I didn't know if I was going to be able to make payroll. I didn't know if I was going to be able to have the cash flow in. The expenses were in the wrong direction. The revenue was in the wrong direction. It wasn't there. And that was after I had built, scaled, and exited another business. Like, at the end of the day, I don't have anything to hide around that. But what do I have? And their response was, oh my God, thank you so much for telling me that. I look at people like you and I just assume that they've never had those challenges. I assume they've never had financial failure. I assume that you wouldn't actually, and she even said in the beginning when she told me, you probably wouldn't understand this. What do you mean I wouldn't understand this? I've been through it, right? But as a leader, it's about grounding yourself in truth, however you can, however possible, because to your point, it's not about the words that you say, it's about the believability of the energy. And that's the whole point of armor. Right? If you have armor, it changes the energy and people know that they can't trust it. Yet when you're completely open and transparent, people trust that as well. And in all of the times that I speak on stage every single year where I get extremely vulnerable, I share some of the darkest moments in my life from stage, I've never, ever had anybody view me through anything other than a lens of strength and credibility because I've walked the path and I'm willing to talk about it with no shame. It's freedom.
And I was just going back to watching you on stage and the story you told and why you're here today, because I was like, I have to have Brian on my podcast because it was so impactful in my life to hear your story. I was like, wow, you know, he's lived it. He gets it. But you were able to take it and use it to make yourself move forward in such a powerful way, as opposed to live in that dark. And, you know, I've often admired people who speak on stage. I've spoken in development in trainings and workshops, but to stand on stage and speak to people. And then I think, you know what? I've heard so many singers say, yeah, I'm throwing up before I come on stage because I'm so nervous, right? Yeah. It's just something we have in us, but we can overcome it and not have it stop us from living the life that we truly desire, what we're passionate about. That's yeah. Right. Wow. Let's talk a little bit about scaling without losing yourself, right? I want to get real for a minute because, as I said, my listeners love real life and you've given them some, you know, examples. You're playing a big game and you're impacting billions of lives. Brian, how do you protect your inner foundation while navigating that scale? Because I think that's a fear that sometimes people have of, I can scale, but I may lose myself in that. And I know awareness is part of it, but you know, maybe give us an example of a moment, a boundary, a habit, something like that, a question that helps you to stay rooted.
For me, it is really about putting myself into a position to be as critical without criticism or judgment, but being as critical and discerning in what is actually in alignment for me versus what I believe might be in alignment for me. Mm-hmm. And what do I mean by that? There are a lot of people who will come into something with these grandiose ideas of building and scaling and creating all of this impact. But then what they'll do is they'll chase what I'm going to call a little bit more vanity in terms of how they're going to do it. And I've done this as well. So I'm going to own this. There were periods when I launched into this business that I even said to myself, well, if I can align with this person because they have this level of followers and they have this size show, or they have these types of people that could be activated, what was I chasing? I was chasing the chance to get exposure. But what does that also do? It puts an expectation on a result that I don't actually have any control over. And it's not something that I'm driving. It's something that I get all high and excited about. I have a client right now that is in the content creation world. Unbelievable story. Has well over 1 million followers on all channels. And it's all organic. Has no purchased followers. But what's interesting is she went down and got really excited about this concept, this idea, this TV show But yet there was no real strategy or structure into how the show was going to monetize, how it would be distributed, what it would do. But she was sold this idea by somebody who had a lot of audience in a channel and got her all on board. She's getting ready to go sell sponsorships, and she couldn't even tell me what the sponsorships would support. They get out ahead of their skis with the idea of the result or getting closer to the result that they want without staying consistent in the daily disciplines that really move the needle. Mm-hmm. And so I know I'm giving a little bit of a long answer on this one, but why? Because this is almost like a value stack in some way, right? To get out and have enough clarity in the worth to set boundaries and hold accountability. Like, we need to understand our own value, and we need to understand where those things align within the values of our lives, right? I could be scaling way faster right now, Caroline, if my primary value was not being a husband and a father. Mm-hmm. Why? Because just this year through September, I've turned down over 40 talks that I could have been paid for, gotten in front of people, had things convert and monetize. Why? Because I'm in the season of dad and I'm not traveling more than twice a month right now. No questions asked, unless it's a weird variable. So the point is like, I'm grounded in the things that matter to me most, more than I ever have been. Where my time, my energy, and my focus go, so that I can also be really discerning when new things hit the plate. The other piece is that there's a lot of people like myself that like to do lots at once. I could build and create all day long, but what does that also mean? I can easily have 10 projects on my plate and none of them are really moving forward. Or I could have 10 projects on my plate and only three of them really align with the real impact and the real path that I want to go down. The others are just ancillary, or I've convinced myself that they are. And so when we're trying and attempting to do too many things, particularly too many things that are not aligned with each other, then it can be a true split of our energy. You and I talked earlier that I don't believe in balance. I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life integration. I believe there's activities that we get paid for and activities we don't get paid for. And there's only so many of those activities we can do in any given 24-hour period. So how clear are we in the activities that are going to move the needle the most for the things that we value the most, whether that's in our business or our lives or otherwise, because that's where scale comes from. And so with each of these things, we really only reach scale through a combination of systems and processes, people and technology. And so if we can understand where each one of those things can create scale for us, especially if it's a solopreneur, a small company that's trying to scale and have less employees wherever possible, like myself, it becomes even more crucial that all of your activities are aligned. And so, for example, I'm a big believer in, once we understand the direction that we're going, what are the complementary activities and what are the things that we can do that might hit on each? Stages is one of the top of the activity funnel, like things for me. I don't want to say a funnel because it's not. But every time I'm on stage, my world grows. What does that mean? Well, I do keynote speaking. I do consulting at a high level. I do this communication architecture. I do strategic planning and leadership coaching. I do individual coaching for entrepreneurs. We have a mastermind. We have a podcast. I have a whole bunch of other activities that support these efforts. We have AI products, but here's the reality. Every single thing I do is complementary to the other components. Meaning, what am I doing? Every time I get on stage, knowing whichever audience I'm in front of, I have multiple entry points for me to be able to help people, serve people, and actually move my business forward. So every time I get on stage, my business scales. But it's also because I'm very intentional with where, who, and how my whole business is structured. So I think it's clarity in aligning the activities that matter the most versus the ones that you think they do. And I think it's getting very, very clear into aligning the activities and having as many of the things that you're focused on work in a way that one activity could impact multiple revenue sources wherever possible. And then just being as aware, intentional, and aligned as you possibly can. Now, this can look a whole bunch of different ways further into this discussion, but at a high level, 10,000 foot level answer, those are the biggest things that I see is the big components. And probably the last, which I think is important, is a lot of people who try to get into their own businesses, especially service-based entrepreneurs, because many of them are the ones that would do it for free if money was no object, end up just giving themselves a job versus running a business. And they're not critically clear on the things that move the needle the most. And so I always give three questions to every business owner that I ever work with. And it's not that you have to move these depending on where they fit today, but having awareness around where these activities fall is important. Any activity that you do in your business ever, I want you to ask three questions. Is this something that only I can do? Meaning, is this your zone of brilliance, your zone of genius, something that no one else could do even close to you? Because Caroline, you're the only one that can think that way, operate that way, distill the language that way. There's a lot of those things in my business because I can't train people to do what I do. I can teach my concepts. I can teach my frameworks. I can create scale and teach systems, but I can't teach somebody to hot seat coach like I do. Right. I don't have a framework for it. It's based on my life and what I see in a moment, right? So that first thing is this something that only I can do? And spend as much of your time in only that category as possible. The second question is this something that someone else could do or would do proficiently or better? Meaning, if I can hand something off and it's got 80% proficiency to what I would do, my time is more valuable than that task. At one point, I would have convinced myself I had to do it because no one can do it like I do it. But the reality of it is that nobody needs to do it exactly like I do it if it creates scale and more exposure and more impact. And so know everything that fits into that list, because whether you're in a position to today or not, you either systematize it, put technology in, or you delegate it to a person. Anything that's in that category. And the last category, which I think is the most damaging, and it's probably the least conscious to most people, is this something that even needs to be done? Mm-hmm. See, many business owners or many leaders convince themselves of a set of tasks that they believe have to be done consistently, when in reality, if you're really honest with yourself, they don't actually move the needle. How much research do you need to do before you call that prospect? How much time do you need to do going into a prospective meeting, preparing for a conversation that you have no idea where it's going to go, right? Like, what is your baseline of proficiency to be able to handle things? And what are the areas that just really don't need your time and attention if you're honest with yourself? And those are sometimes the harder conversations to have. But if you can do the few things I talked about in the beginning, and you can layer yourself in understanding clarity with every task in your business, you'll be set up for scale and success.
Yes. And I call that right around being intentional with everything that you do. Intentionality, yep. I think we talked about communication as a lost art, but I think intentionality is the other. To your point, we're in that robotic state, do. I was actually coaching a senior leader who wants to become a director. And one of the things we talked about is finding space. You need space in your calendar to be able to develop yourself, strategize, whatever it is. And when you look at your calendar or the tasks that you do in a regular cadence, what are the things that you can get rid of? So I suggested what I used to do in the corporate world was we would do a stop, start, continue. What are the things we could stop? What are the things we could start? Mm-hmm. What are the things that, you know, need to continue? And the continue piece could be, well, then we could continue, but maybe give them to somebody else. But one of the things was she was talking to me about this report that takes hours to do every week because somebody had requested it. Well, what's the intention of that report? What does that person need? We found out they just wanted to look at it. And I was like, you've just saved yourself 3 hours every week running this report because you don't need to do it, because we didn't find out what was the purpose behind it. Because the other thing is, I may be able to give you something completely different that's going to solve for, that's going to take me way less time. And so I often talk about intentionality in what you do. And when you have time, what are you now doing with that time? How are you growing yourself? How are you integrating some of the things? And I want to talk a little bit about integration, but how are you starting to integrate some of the things to have you think at a higher level at that next step, instead of just being okay with where you are? And some people are okay with where they are, right? But those that want to grow, let's talk a little bit about integration, because I know you and I, before we hit record, talked about balance. You know, and I like I said, I say to you, for balance is how many hours am I spending at work versus how many hours is for me? Because we work to have a better life, and I think we forget that a lot of the times, and I know I did. When you think about integration, and I think that's a big piece, even in learning and development, I can teach you all sorts of things. You can go, hey, great. But if you're not integrating it, if you're not embodying it, it's not going to change how you live. How do you guide individuals around why it's so important to integrate or embody leading from wholeness in your life, whether it's personal or professional? I'll leave it open at that.
Well, I'm going to answer that question in two ways. The first is to the second part of what you just asked, that last question. How do I get people to understand the importance of embodying? It all goes back to the energy conversation and the protection and the disconnection. Mm-hmm. that we've discussed so far today. Why? Because so often, like in my business, I am the product, right? Today, though I have products that I sell, I am the product today. Meaning people are hiring me, for what I can do on stage, for what I do in a boardroom, for what I do with individuals and leaders. However, if they're hiring me for the product, for what they think they're going to get from me through this process, and I myself don't embody the same principles that I'm teaching, will they trust me? Will they feel congruence and understanding of like, oh, it's like a chef that won't eat their own food. It's like, wait, you'll cook the food, but you won't even eat it yourself? It's like, what do you mean? Right? Like I say this, and this is true for many people in the position that you're in right now, new coaches, new leaders, new consultants, service-based entrepreneurs. Most of the time in any service-based business where there is not a product, and even sometimes with products, you as the leader, the owner, the cultural setter are the product to begin with. So if you yourself are not embodying the principles that you teach, the philosophies that you teach, the showing the use case, and again, not for a fabricated way, because people will sniff that out. Mm-hmm. But if you yourself are not doing something and you yourself don't live in congruence with what you're teaching, why would anybody else buy it from you? First and foremost, that's the big piece. The second though is integration for me is, I believe that we truly can have all things and everything that we actually want in our lives. We just can't have them all in the exact same moment. And so integration for me is, again, going back to even the alignment around the activities and how do they support themselves and how do I allow myself to recognize that, to your point, it's not an equal set. I spend this many hours here and this many hours here, but I have set up my life to allow me to pivot and focus where I'm needed at those times. I've told you, I'm in the season of dad. I work far less hours than many people would believe, but I am laser focused and dialed in with what I'm doing with that time. But what does integration look like elsewhere? Well, I teach a lot on AI. I was a late adopter to AI. I teach AI through a totally different lens in the sense that everybody is chasing AI right now for speed, for automation, for impact. And I even say it's one of the greatest investments we can make, right? Because it helps us aggregate information, make decisions faster, connect with things faster. The list could go on for all the things AI can do for us. But coming back to even to your point before, I'm not talking about artificial intelligence. I'm talking about awareness and intentionality. Because mm-hmm. with it, we can actually be better leaders, better with artificial intelligence, better with the systems that scale our business. But great example, I wasn't planning to be a published author. You see this book over here, right there. It's called The Cat Who Watched the Wind. Okay. I just filmed a solo episode on my own show where I read it and showed where this came from idea to publish book in 13 days and why I did it and what I did as a result with the audio. Now, this was because we had a dying cat. He's no longer dying. He made a miraculous recovery, but it was to process and prepare myself and my daughter, who has the special relationship with him. But this is just another example of what I'm meaning. Why? Because she's going to help me record the audiobook version because it's also a portion of her. My daughter, I have been working with for the last year, and we have been working. She's a creative. She loves to do creative things. So what have I done? I've helped her build an AI-based drop shipping t-shirt business where she can create designs. She understands cost of goods sold. She understands inventory where we want to do it in the traditional sides. She understands drop shipping. She's learning the whole process. She's 10. It's a process that lights her up. She loves and is excited. But what is it also? It's another way that I get to apply the AI skills, and there's elements that are relevant for it in the ways that I teach business integration. Because why? Yes, now this is a book that I'm getting credit for in my business, but it also comes back to the fact that she wants to write more of these, and we're going to. My son loves gaming. I bought a Nintendo device just to play games with him, a game that he wanted, not for me, for him. Why? Because he wants to become a streamer and he wants to become a gamer. Well, I have all the equipment because of all the podcast stuff. We haven't actually released one to date because I'm in the process now of getting him to learn editing, because what I've told him is, dude, I'll play with you. I'll do all these things. We'll even run the channel together, but you're going to do all the editing. You're going to do all the posting. You're going to learn the process, right? Not for the sake of business. However, it is a very tangible business approach for everything I teach as well. And it's a hobby and an activity I get to do with my son, right? And so those are just two examples that they want to do those things with me. They've asked to do those things with me. I could sit here and say, well, no, those are in the business category. Let's go do these other things. But instead, I'm teaching them both business, functional skills, abilities to do things, and I'm getting to be in my business, learning the technology, and being a really present, good dad all simultaneously. Integrating your life is, again, not having to have those harsh walls of saying, well, this doesn't fit here, it does fit here. It's, well, what if it could? What if part of my business takes off and it's actually to support my daughter's business and she has more success than me? Awesome! Awesome! Because why? It's still a proof, it's still credibility, and it's still on brand for who I am and what I do. So for me, integration is living in a place of congruence versus conflict in who you are, which is what allows me to walk on stage, walk out into the audience afterwards, meet people at masterminds, show up on a podcast here, people see me on social media, and the feedback that to me is the greatest compliment I could get, Brian, you're the same person in every category. Yep. Because I'm integrating and embodying who I am and what I believe in everything I touch. And when that happens, no different than the scaling answer in business, when that happens, they're literally, it's intangible for many people, but there is a momentum and a flow and an abundance and an ease that starts to get created in your life when you're living in congruence instead of conflict.
Wow. That was powerful. I actually had goosebumps while you were saying that. And I think that's part of it, right? Is really taking our passions and what is it that brings us joy and passion and freedom and abundance. And because that's what life is about, taking that. And what can I do with that energy? Because that is something
exactly right
that I can bring and joy value. And peace and freedom to others. Yeah, absolutely.
And you may or may not have even seen this, but like one of the things I do, I'm a weekend warrior photographer. I love it. I didn't know anything about photography until COVID. I learned it. I've done it. I've gotten pretty damn good at it. But here's the reality. When I go to other events with multiple speakers, you might not have seen this in the Back of Growth Now movement, but I had my camera. I knew Justin had professional photographers there, but what do? When I go to events with other speakers, I'll take headshots of them on stage because as a speaker, I know that we can never have enough headshots of us doing what we love on stage. And so what do? I edit it through the lens of a speaker, not through the lens of a photographer, and I'm helping capture in just a moment how I see them, how I felt them on stage, and it's a gift that I give to the other speakers afterwards. I don't charge for it. I don't get hired as a photographer. I never want to. That's not the business I'm in. But that's an example of where I can integrate something, add some additional value, and it's in alignment with something I want to be doing anyway, which is taking cool pictures of cool people, right? And but yet it adds value to the event and people see me up and moving. And so there's all these blended components. The more I've learned to embrace this and live like this in every area of my life, the more fun I have and the more freedom I have.
Wow, that's powerful. So myself, for someone listening, right? Like you've just spoken about something amazing that we all want to achieve. What's something that somebody can do? And I'm going to give you a two-part. What's something that somebody can do now to first look at the inner resource that they need to reconnect with? And then what's the one action they can take within the next 24 hours that's going to help them return to themselves to be able to start to see and feel what that feels like?
I want anybody who's listening right now to take out a piece of paper and draw a T in it as if you're creating two different lists, okay? We literally are. We're going to create two lists. The first list is all the people, places, sources of information, environments, things that you do that leave you uplifted, that bring you light, that bring you energy, that bring you joy, that you could be there for 8 hours and it only felt like one because you're in flow. You can't wait to get back to see those people, be in those places, do those things. Everybody knows what that feels like. Write everything in your life that fits on that side of the list. The second list is all the people, places, sources of information, environments, things that you do that leave you feeling depleted, defeated, unworthy, that you have been there for 8 hours slamming your head against the wall and it felt like 80 hours because you do not want to get back to see those people, get in those places or do those things. We all know what those look like, but very few people put awareness or intentionality into actually mapping them out side by side. The action after you create this list is to systematically, wherever you possibly can, be able to reduce, refine, remove, repair the things on the negative side of the list and spend as much on the positive side of the list as you possibly can, okay? Now, I realize there's complications with this. Well, I can't say goodbye to my family. I can't get rid of all of them. Yeah, but you can set boundaries. You can start taking incremental steps to start to reclaim the value and the good parts of those relationships and protect yourself from the parts that are still damaging or toxic, right? That's a repair, a refine. It doesn't have to be the full removal. But what I find is that more people spend more time on the negative side of their list than they do on the positive, just by nature, just because we're in that performance state and we're living our lives. And so all I want you to do is to take everything in your life that you know you touch, look at it over the average of a month so that you capture the majority of things that you do and make sure everything gets on that list. Honor yourself and spend as much time on the positive list as you possibly can. Why? Because if it's lighting you up, if it's moving you, if it gives you energy, if you can't wait back to see those people, it's because those are the ones that are honoring and reflecting back to you who you really are and what you're really capable of. The other sides are still expecting performance over who you are as a person. They're expecting who the world told you who to be versus who you really are. And I just know that freedom lies on that same list for each and every one of you, even if I taught you nothing else.
Yeah, love that. And I think the boundaries, I don't know if I'm going to say this the right way, but I think the boundaries are important. I was just speaking with somebody about that today. Because you can create boundaries with someone. It doesn't mean that they're going to honor the boundaries. It doesn't mean that they're going to adhere to the boundaries. But if you stay firm to your boundaries, again, communication is key, but if you can stay firm to those boundaries, they eventually will give up, adjust, adhere to, right? Like it's going to happen, remove themselves, whatever that looks like.
With a couple really important caveats though. One, I think that there's often a misconception around the purpose of boundaries, and particularly for those that they're being set on or for. It's the belief that if someone in my life is setting boundaries for me, it's because they don't want me in their life anymore. Mm. And the inverse is actually true. Boundaries are an attempt to actually keep you in their life. And so hear that for someone if you're on the receiving side, as well as for someone who might be setting it. The other side to this is that boundaries are not armor. Armor protects pain. Boundaries are a communicated contract that exists based on your clear existence. And so if you set a boundary, but you're reactionary, or you get resentful, or you get angry, or you get defensive, or you feel the need to justify, to defend and uphold that boundary, you are no longer in a position of a boundary. You are existing in a position of armor. Therefore, you will not get what you want. And so boundaries are actually using empathy, clarity, and communication to really be able to set expectations or hopes for the future of that relationship. And it's really just giving yourself that flexibility, but having the courage to be able to stand in that when someone does not respect the boundary that you spoke and be willing to do something different without causing more damage, because reactions and armor always create damage, which defeats the point of the boundary. So I'll give a very short example of this without going into too much detail. My dad is somebody that struggled with certain elements of building relationships with both of my kids, particularly my son, who's on the autism spectrum and is very literal, okay? And so there would be little things or little components that were really just a neurological way of processing for my son that my dad would receive as he didn't want to be around him, or it would be critical or what have you. And then my dad would get sad. And a lot of men, when we get sad, we get mad. And then it creates damage, right? It's a reaction. And so a boundary I set for my father, and there's a lot more to this story, but it was a very simple one. It's like, Dad, if you ever react, get angry, or get upset with my kids around these things, I'm going to attempt to, if I'm there, diffuse and bring us back to center. And if it does not come back to center, I'm going to be taking my kids and I'm going to be leaving your house. I'm setting what I'm going to do, regardless of what he does, situationally with clarity up front, so that when I leave, it won't be a reaction or a surprise to him either. Now, fortunately, there was only ever one situation that it escalated to that level where I actually had to leave. But guess what? I didn't react. I didn't yell at my dad. I wasn't upset. I tried to calm him. He did not. He went off another way, and I put my hand on his chest, on his heart, and I said, I love you, Dad. We're going to go. We'll talk later. A boundary is holding in confidence and conviction what you know is best for you and those that you love and are trying to protect, regardless of any other variable. But the reaction and the defense and the armor will derail and discredit all of the progress you could make. And so I say this because boundaries are very effective, but not if they become armor.
Mm. I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you. Brian, how can people find you before we go to my hot seat for you? where can people find you?
If you're online, you can find me at brianbogert.com. There you have access to a variety of other things. Not all of our programs are listed there. So if there's real interest in pursuing something and you don't see something, reach out. Our podcast Flipping the Lid is there as well. But if you're a social media person, I am at Bogert Brian on all channels, including YouTube. We're on a mission to impact over 1 billion lives as quickly as we can by reducing the level of suffering that exists on this planet. The only reason I say that is because 99.9% of those people will never pay me a dollar. We put a lot of free content out there. We put a lot of resources out there because we genuinely focus on creating impact, because I believed that moved people move people. So if you felt moved by anything today, whether or not it causes you to want to lean in to my world further, I'm okay with that. But what I would ask is, if you got moved by anything today, reshare this episode so that more people can hear it, right? Reshare and reteach any concept that you took, because if you can move it through your world, it has the same ripple effect of movement through other people's worlds.
Love that. Yes. And I'll make sure everything is included in the show notes, but I often talk about that. Don't assume that somebody else isn't going through something similar to what you are. Share. And I used to love doing that with my team as a leader. I felt it was my responsibility. Hey, this resonated with me. Thought I'd share it with you. Let's have a conversation about it too, if you're interested. So I think that's going to help people move quicker, is when we talk about it and we brainstorm together with love, because that's definitely what the world needs. So I've always asked a question at the end of my show, but I'm changing it up and I'm calling it TBL, Hot Seat Burn the BS. And I have three questions for you. They're real quick hits. Okay. So what's one leadership lie you believed for too long?
I needed to be the first one there and the last one to leave.
Yeah. Second question is, what's one thing you wish more leaders would admit out loud?
That they do not have all the answers.
And my final question is, what's one overused leadership phrase or buzzword you would happily light on fire?
Should. I'm tired of leaders and organizations shoulding all over their people. Like I said earlier, should is a shame-based word. It implies whoever you are, whatever you're doing, it's not good enough. And too many leaders say, you should have gotten in earlier. You should have made that extra call yesterday. You should have gotten me the report on time. You should have. I want to remove the word should from leadership. And why? Because I have yet to find a situation that we can't replace it with either could or would, right? What could you have done differently? What would you do differently now that you know, right? Change the questions. Why? Because should, as soon as we put people into the shame and blame, growth and opportunity go out the window. And that's one of the fastest ways to remove shame and blame, is to just drop the word should from our language.
All right. So I'm retiring the word should from my language. So thank you. Brian, it was an honor to have you on today. I thank you so much for your time. This was like so valuable. Thank you.
Caroline, thank you for having the heart and making the investment to build a platform that I can come and pour good into the world. I appreciate you and the questions that you asked. And I'm excited to continue to see your impact grow, because your heart is pure and more people need you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thanks for tuning in to today's Balanced Leader. If you want to go even deeper, then visit my website at carolinebarrett.com, find some free resources, and look at all the different ways that I can support you to become your best self. Remember, change begins with just one small step. It's those tiny actions that start you on the path to achieving your dreams and finding balance. And as always, life is an experience. So take a moment to enjoy the journey and appreciate the progress you make along the way. Until next time, keep taking those small steps, savor the journey, and lead with courage and authenticity. This is Caroline reminding you to stay bold, stay balanced, and keep moving confidently towards your dreams.